there has been so much misinformation put out from some of these crazy Karens.
Blah, blah, blah. Excuse me.
We have the mother. This is obviously the missing mother. And we have the child. And they just poof, disappeared.
It was how he was not only going to kill me, but how he was going to kill my husband.
And the race was on.
This is The Klein Files with Philip and Carolyn.
And a very good, whatever day and morning. Time it is.
Good morning.
It all kind of blends in right now with my travel schedule. It is all blended in. And one minute I wake up and it's dark outside and I go, wow, okay, it's time to get up. And then I look and go, hey, wait, it's nighttime. Weird things are happening with me. I don't know. I think I got mad cow disease. Remember the old show with, Boston Legal? Denny Crane, all those guys. And
I did not watch that.
Oh, it's a great show. And I just feel like I got mad cow right now. I can't remember things. It's crazy. But it's sleep deprivation is what it is. I know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your attitudinal problem this morning? You got your little Yeti over there.
Yeah, the one you stole. I had to steal it. Whoa.
No. Mm-hmm. No. I didn't steal anything.
You did.
I did not. What is this sitting on my desk right here? Oh, wait. It's a brand new Yeti. How do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, who gave me that, I think? Let me look right here. Was it my children? No. Was it my staff? No. Oh, Corey Crenshaw, attorney at law.
Yeah.
Thank you, Corey.
Let's be clear. Let's be clear on this situation.
I'm going to plug Corey. I'm going to plug Corey. Go ahead.
You were given one. I was given
mm-hmm.
one. And
where the hell are they?
I drink coffee out of that one every morning here.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, it disappeared.
It's not me. Don't even look
if
over here.
If I come home your house and I find it, we're going to have problems. Let me finish. Then you call him and you're like, hey, I need a new one because mine got stolen. That wasn't even yours. You didn't even drink out of it. So you get a brand new one and I get chopped liver.
Okay, who's the big boss around here?
You haven't even been here, so me.
You. When the big boss is coming back in from a long road trip, how come you can't make sure that everything that I need to survive in my office, and I'm talking about, by the way, Dot Pretzels, good,
oh my gosh.
Good pick.
Back to this Yeti. What is it? What's the hashtag on it? Because
it says
if
hashtag.
Doesn't know.
It's all right. Corey Crenshaw. Let me tell you about Corey Crenshaw. He's a really great guy, and he's down. He's Representative Crenshaw's cousin, right?
Yes.
They're both from Texas, and Representative Crenshaw is a true American hero. SEAL team, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was a real SEAL team guy, not a fake SEAL team 2 guy. He was a real SEAL team guy, and we've gotten to know him. And his cousin Corey is an attorney in Beaumont, Texas. And God bless Corey, because you know I see Corey like if I go out to lunch or you know whatever I see Corey, and I say, hey man. You know, I see you on Facebook every once in a while showing the world these, what are they called? What are those called right there? Yetis, small Yetis. And I said, well, you know, how come I can't have one? So he gave me 2. That is true. Your story is correct. But I brought him here to the office. And then you got all wound up and said, well, how come you got 2? Well, because I'm the boss, okay? And people use us and they represent this company to me and et cetera for the time being. And so I brought them here. Well, you use one for coffee. True. Okay. But the second one I use for ice water. And so I keep my ice water on my desk.
I can't.
And I sip my ice water out of it. For those of you that don't know what we're laughing about, I've been accused of drinking a lot of diet sodas In fact, at one point I got, what was the poisoning I got?
Aspartame poisoning
from drinking 24 Diet Dr. Peppers in one day. And a lot of you are going, no. Well, yeah, it really happened. And I was in the hospital for, 3 days? I will say you sat by my side for 3 days. That was very nice.
I did. But back to the Yeti over here.
But anyway, so not to digress, she drinks out of this green puke-looking Yeti.
That's teal.
Whatever. And so she's not here, right? She's flitting around doing her thing. So I'll go in there one day, and I said, we got this brand new ice machine. And I said, you know what? I am going to get some new ice, and I'll put it in this Yeti because it was nice and clean. Norman did a good job on that. And so I put some ice in it, brought it to my desk. Well, it didn't leave my desk until I walked in the other day, and it's gone. And I'm like, where the hell? And they said, well, Carolyn took it back. And it, nah, nah, nah. So I just called my good friend Corey Crenshaw. I said, Corey, I've got a 911 emergency. And I'm telling you, it's a 911 emergency. He goes, God dang, Klein, what is it? I said, my Yeti cup's been stolen. He goes, I'm going to fix you up. So on one side, it's a big one, right? It's a big old, what do you call these things? Just a big old coffee cup. No? Just a Yeti.
Yes.
On one side, it says, hashtag call Crenshaw. You just got to love that. And on the other side, this is what I love. This is why I got it. Hashtag Waffle House Wild. Hashtag scattered, covered, cuffed.
Yes.
Anyway, Corey has a great sense of humor. And
to be clear, he's a criminal defense lawyer, correct?
Yeah, he does plenty of
work. I mean,
I'm
sure he does other stuff too.
He does plenty of work.
He's known, and a lot of his Yeti sayings are because of crimes around Southeast Texas.
And he's consulted. Yeah, I know it exactly. So you see, and he's consulted this firm along with a lot of other lawyers. Imagine that. But anyway, our bottom line is this, is that we are Yeti ready.
Oh my God.
What?
I can't.
What?
Not today.
Well, that's what that's what your son said yesterday.
I bet he did.
We had a good time yesterday, by the way, if I hadn't told you.
That's good.
I came in the office. My eldest grandson's in the office. His name is Cameron. And he helped me out in my office, get my desk straightened up. And then he said he wanted to go play on his tablet. So he went into the, what do we call that down there on the other side of the building?
The playroom.
Yeah, the playroom where we take statements from children that have been abused and that sort of thing. And family members. And so he hung out in there. And then we decided we'd go get our hair cut.
He comes back with a Philip haircut.
You, beggars can't be choosers in these things.
I think I'm just gonna have to start taking over.
Oh, again. No, you're because you'll have little curlers in his hair, little bows.
Oh, Lord.
So,
anyways,
so we came back and we looked like two Marines and we put our sunglasses on and we went and had a burrito. And
they went and had lunch without me.
That's true.
And didn't even bring me back anything. Well, I'm slaving in this office every day.
Slaving. Okay.
Anyway, so we
slaving. Remember that word, folks. Slaving.
We took a little break. I do. We took a little break. We had a month off. Philip's travel schedule and my travel schedule have just not coincided.
Now, hold on. Now, hold on. Who covered these offices while you were gone?
Taylor.
No. Who covered these offices while you were gone?
I guess you.
And I did a pretty damn good job. Yeah.
Let me put it this way. When
did you see a case increase come into the office the week you were gone? Let's tell everybody where you were. You were working so hard.
Actually, I did have to work because everybody
on drinking
in this
on drinking margaritas at the beach in Orange Beach.
Well,
at the Florabama.
Okay, but to my defense, I got a phone call every day while I was on vacation, either from someone in this office
Not me.
And or an attorney.
Not me.
And or a supervision.
Not me.
So legit, not I wouldn't me. Say it was just a vacation, because if it was, I wouldn't have answered one dang call.
Right. And then I flew off to work the day you were coming in and made, well, how many court appearances and investigated how much stuff. And, you know, there's some stuff coming down the pike that we'll talk about later. One missing persons case and one very, what do we call it, governmental? Governmental case. And so it was a work week for me where I logged in 82 hours working. 82 hours working. How many,
well, good for you.
How many hours did you log in working on your vacation?
Well, I was on vacation, so I shouldn't have had 1 ounce of work.
Not my fault you give your number out.
I don't know. I didn't count, but
yeah.
Enough.
An hour.
Enough to cover at least 1 full day worth out of 7.
And let's get on the record here. Did I bother you?
You did one day, yes.
Oh, God dang. What did I call you about?
Okay. So
I never called you.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Anyways, so we took a month off and we are back.
Yeah, we did.
We do have some guests lined up for future episodes, and we are excited to bring some fresh topics back. But today marks, actually, when you hear this, it'll be July 1st.
Right.
And July has always been a month around this office where we have missing children that all went missing in the first week of July.
Almost every case on missing children we have in this office right now, they came in July.
Correct.
With the exemption of Blassingame. But every single case, I think there's 5 or 6 we've got going in this office, something to that effect, that the person went missing in July. And we don't understand that. I mean, it's kind of like, well, when was the last time you saw them? July 6th. What? Another July case. So anyway, what we wanted to do today is we wanted to go through some of the public ones that we're working on. And we wanted to, look, I'm going to say it first, Caroline, because I know it's going to come out of your heart, because your tender little heart just hurts for these children. And mine does too. Although I'm kind of hardened at this point at 40 years. I got to tell you, the public out here that listens to us in these cases, if you don't think it's emotional and you don't think it gets in your head, and if you don't think you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, like I woke up last night at 3 o'clock in the morning, looking straight at the ceiling, thinking about a couple of cases, missing children's, missing adult cases that we are working on. You got another thing coming. And people get very emotional. That's why when my staff says, well, Facebook is fired up about this case and accusing us of things, I go, it's emotion, guys. It's emotion. You get people that are emotional. And they emotion overrides thought. Let me say that again. In these cases, emotions override thought. When I teach at some of these law schools in the past, and when I get out there and give these speeches, I got a big one coming up in October. You know, these are the things I teach, try to teach families, is that you have to check your emotion at the door. And I can't tell you how many staff members that have worked here or that are currently work here say, can I take a 5-minute break and walk out the door? And they walk out the door and you find them in a hallway crying. And everybody kind of looks at me. Yes or no, Caroline? Everybody looks at me. Well, he's so hard. Not hard. I'll come up and put my arm on your shoulder. I'll say, hey, I get you're emotional. But emotions don't help find missing people. Your head helps us find missing people. So get your cry out, get your tissues, clean your face up, put some makeup on or whatever guys do, and get back in the conference room and get back in the conference, because it's horrific what happens to some of these children and adults and that sort of thing. And you have to investigate each one like it's a homicide. From minute one, that's the way you have to, you know, oh, he drove off with so-and-so. Okay, great. You have to look at it through a homicide investigator's eyes.
And I think that's when I look at these three names here that we'll go in chronological order with. Mm-hmm. All three of those were never treated like a crime scene. Not one of them. And so I think that is frustrating for, and you know, private investigators that come in, and on all of these, we came in after the fact.
Because we came in after families went, oh God, these guys don't know what they're doing. Or, oh God, these guys are, you know, and I'm not bashing the police. My God, I couldn't do their job. I mean, these poor guys, you think we've got cases. These guys sometimes have what, a caseload of 40 cases, 30, 40 cases apiece. How do you keep up with that with one man or one woman or one, you know, what do you young people call it now? Identifiers or whatever. I know, because I watched something last night, just kind of freaked me out. But anyway, the bottom line is this, is that these guys work hard, and they don't, it's not the only case they have. And they'll work it hard for about 72 hours. But after that, it's like the show. I tell people this, and I think I've said it on this show 100 times. You have to watch A&E's The First 48 if you really, 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 really want to understand how cases break down or how cases come together. It's The First 48 hours. It's so important. And that's what they teach these young officers coming out of the academy. When you get on scene and you've got a death or you've got a missing person, get on the radio, get the description out, get NCMEC fired up, and it has to happen in the first 48. Because if it does not happen in the first 48, folks, it's going to create an aura where guys like me or girls like Caroline or this firm or whatever, however you want to put it, we get retained immediately to come in behind. And what's the magic words, Caroline? Clean it up. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times they'll say, oh, that's just a domestic matter. Or they'll say, oh, well, it's only the father or the mother. Or, well, we don't see any signs of foul play. And that's when the train comes off the track and sits there for sometimes up towards a year before families throw their hands in the air and say, we've got to get someone to help us here. And that's when usually we come in. You know, one of the things I said in a speech in front of a big town hall was, I'm a cleaner. And that's true. I am. I mean, I've said it. I'm proud of it. I hold on to it. Believe it or not, sometimes small town police departments, sheriff's departments, even some of the federal agencies out there, they either A, don't have the manpower right now, or B, they don't understand what they're working with. So that's when usually they'll call us sometimes, right, Caroline? I mean, they'll call us and say, hey, do you mind getting in the car and come on up here? You know, we don't have any resources to pay you, but we'd like you to just kind of review the case and see what direction you guys would go with. Not me, not Caroline, not MJ, not Taylor, not Troy, not Charlie, not all the people that are a part of the team that work for these guys. They look at us and say, hey, would you take a look at this case and would you tell us what you think? And I'm more than happy to do that. More than happy. The problem is once the case gets over a year and it gets announced that either we are coming in or another firm is coming in, the nasty people on the Facebook or the Instagram now, or what is the other one? TikTok. TikTok get all fired up, and here they come. Oh, you know, this is what happened. And then conjecture becomes fact. And then it gets on, like I said, Facebook, radio, TV. It gets out there, and they start being stupid. I mean, just stupid. Numbnuts. A bunch of numbnuts out there that think they're something that they're not. And we have a big reputation for releasing to the public what we want the public to know to further the case. It's not brain surgery. And people look at some of our posts that we make and go, well, why are they talking about that? Because we want to further that part of the case. And then the other side goes, yeah, see, they don't know what they're talking about. And it just creates an aura of hell. But it's good for us as investigators because we get everybody talking. And then we watch what would they say. Because you can always tell we have things in our investigation file that we never release to the public that end up solving some of these big cases. Because somebody will say something about something we have not told the public. That means that person knows what's going on the inside. Did I say that right, Carolyn?
You did.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, what we want to do today is we want to go through these cases. And, you know, again, the first thing, we want to send our love and care and support to each of these families. I mean, I've had to hold too many people, people we have found in the last, in the last, 3 months? Had to hold some people while they cried. And, let me tell you something. I'd go bananas if it was one of my grandchildren or my daughter or my son. And my son-in-law and my daughter-in-law, the cops could probably sit there and tell me, hey, you can't talk to me. you can't work this case. And I'd turn around and look at him and go, you want to watch me? I'll find him. Not a problem. But I know that's based on emotion, and emotion isn't a good thing. So that's what it is. So let's go, Caroline. Let's go with the cases.
All right. So we're going to start with Ember Graham.
Hold on. Let me take a sip out of my Corey Crenshaw cup.
All right. Ember Graham went missing July 2nd, 2015. Everybody knows this case. We have several previous episodes on this case that you can check out for in-depth details regarding her missing case. She has not been found. I think there's, what's the word I'm looking for? Conjecture about what happened. I think you have a very divided family. You have a father that's dead. You have a mother that's married and moved on and had more children. And I can't sit here and say that I've really seen a whole lot out of their camp looking for her.
She wouldn't interview with me.
Well, I don't think she interviewed with anybody. A brief conversation with myself, but not an interview. Hold on. I take that back. She did interview at the very beginning.
Right. But afterwards, afterwards, we looked at her as a victim, and we still look at her as a quasi-victim. We told her that we wanted to visit with her again, and then she refused. I don't know why she refused, but she refused. I mean, that's just kind of craziness there. I mean, you've talked to us once. So all we want to do is verify some facts. So, I mean, that's something that's bothered me. But again, she's on record right now. She's not going to do any more interviews with us. Now,
we've searched a lot of locations based off of the facts that we received in the case and from law enforcement and from witnesses that were there.
Mother Nature has not been our friend.
No, not in that area. The searches that we have done were based off of time distance studies from what we saw on camera. Leaving and coming back by the same location.
Can I talk about that for a second? Because I think sometimes people get confused.
Sure.
When you hear us talk about, in every case we have, we do time distance studies. When we do time distance studies, the art of time distance studies is based upon three things. The vehicle, right? what kind of vehicle is it? Is it a truck? Is it a car? Is it a bike? Is it a, you know, what is it? Second, if it is a bike or another vehicle that does not use fuel, there's a different way we do it. So we'll just put that over to the side for a second. If it's a car or truck, what we do is we get the manufacturer's information on average fuel, average mile per gallon, that sort of thing. And we can track from point A to point B, how much fuel was used, et cetera, except for one circumstance, which is cars or trucks that have been found in a water source, such as a lake, river, that sort of thing. We can't. Sometimes we can see if the fuel tank was full or is fuel full because everything's electronic now, right? And you get it off the black box. You can pull the black box and you can download the black box and see how things were. But the bottom line to the fuel, for example, the case in, what's the last one we used? The only one that comes to mind is the Canadian case, and that's where we did the time distance study with the fuel in the tank because the car was found, and it was full of gas. We knew that was a certain amount of gas that was taken out of the car. Then we got the averages from Chrysler Dalmer, and then we put it onto a what we call a C-map, which is a map that traces time and distance between point A and point B. It's made by Google. It's under the Google Maps. You can jump around and find it. And then we can see how far a car would go or distances by street, that sort of thing. The newer vehicles that have the OnStar system, mm-hmm. that is automatically broadcast to a down-base system where we can use that data. And then it can tell us actually the streets they went down, how fast they were going, that sort of thing. And sometimes people have those new, we've got them in all our vehicles now. They're camera systems just like the police officers use. But what they do is they track per mile where you go, longitude and latitude, weather. It tracks everything. And plus has a video to it. A lot of police officers that pull over certain people in this room, mm-hmm. that would be you, mm-hmm. And they look at her equipment and go, whoa, where did you get that? And it's new in the market. It's good stuff. And it really helps. And it would help the public, too. We encourage the public. You know, if you get in a wreck or something, you say, well, he hit me first. Then he hit me first. Nobody has a camera. But when you got a camera, you got it on TV. If it's on TV, it's solid. And so we recommend, you know, spend what they cost now, $30 for the cheap ones?
I have no idea. Yeah. Charlie's in charge of all that.
Yeah, they're $400 per unit for our units. But they are all downloadable on your smartphones, and we keep a CAD system in the cars where it downloads to that, and we can upload, and it keeps for 30 days. So, you know, it's good stuff, and it helps us on surveillances. We don't have to have a camera in our hands. We just drive around like John Jones behind some of these cars, and we can do that. But anyway, so we can use those for that. In this case, they did have some cell phone data in the Amber Graham case that was able to help us get to a certain point. There was a convenience store and there was a commercial dump site that had cameras that we were able to get the time distance between those two right there, use the cellular data, and then come up with a certain square foot area to search. And we've done, what, 6, 7, 8, 9 searches up there. We've gone up there kind of quiet. And then all of a sudden, boom, the wildfires hit up there. And let me tell you something, folks. It destroyed everything. Those wildfires were just unbelievable. Houses and fire stations. And, I mean, it was near the town of Uno, right? Uno? Did I say that right?
I don't think it's Uno.
I know or in Uno.
I know.
I know in Uno, California, that's the areas we went and met with the fire department. We went and met with the sheriff's department. Doesn't go out there because it's run by cartels. Am I right about that?
That's what they say.
That's what they tell us up there. And the cops don't go out there because it's one cop against, what, 60 members of a cartel. Guess who's going to lose that gun battle? We got up there. There were shots fired while we were up there. I don't think I'd go back up there without a vest right now. Not that they're picking on Philip Klein, but they are... you know, you get these Californians, smoke your pot, and you smoke the marijuana, makes you feel better, you know, all that good crap that the left-wing people put out. And basically what we see is up there is that there is still a couple of small areas that we couldn't get to. We were on top of a mountain range, came back, but the growers are in there growing. And when do they harvest? In October, right? If I remember right.
I don't know.
The big harvest of marijuana out there is in October, and they just take it into the small little cities, put them in warehouses, let them dry, and then I guess they have these chopping machines and chop it up and put them in bales, and off it goes to you out there, to your local street corner drug dealer. And so we know, I am almost 1,000% sure that little body's laying out there somewhere. I can say it because I've talked to the family. We tell them out there, we're going to sneak back out there very quietly. Most of the family has moved out of that area up there,
They all have now.
Have they all? Okay. So they all have moved out of the area now. So it's more conducive for us to come in. I can't say enough about the Shasta County Sheriff's Department. In the middle of our investigation up there, while we're up there, Papini disappears. And they put all the resources into Papini because here comes the national media following this case of this disappeared, blonde-haired, good-looking girl. You know, again, look sell. And camera crews everywhere. I mean, you know, you can't do your work out there because they're out driving around with their cameras. Oh, y'all look like investigators. What are y'all doing? And what are we supposed to say? Looking for a dead baby. I mean, that's what...
Well, maybe it would have gotten a lot more attention.
It could have, but remember back then we didn't want to tell anybody what we were doing, and we were working very hard late into the night, into the early morning hours. Dogs up there, everything else, and we're probably going to crank that back up here pretty quick because we really have been able to do some graphing, and it's above my head, but some of the mapping people have been able to do some graphing that I've visited with. They're trying to put some stuff together for me out of Dallas right now. And if I can get that, I think we fly back out there and we'll have a better chance of it. The problem is that we need air support. Now, we have some new droning systems in that case. We have a new drone that can do two things. Heat sensor. It can track actually by ground. And what do I mean by that? That means that if there's disturbed ground, we can see the disturbed ground. It has a different color to it. We can, and the last thing is we can do general mapping now. So we can put the map onto, it's crazy stuff, folks, but it happens. We can put the mapping and GPS coordinates into the drone, and we can shoot the drone off, and the drone will come and it can map a half a mile area. What is it, Caroline? 45 minutes an hour, and they can zzz, zzz, zzz. We have these new batteries that are, it's so great. I mean, you don't have to come down every 15 minutes and change a battery. We have some brand new technology that we're going to use for the Amber Graham case. The situation is, again, it was a horrific case. My pouring and out love go to the family up there. I just wish, you know, I just wish some of these crazy people would just leave this family alone. Just leave them alone. They have really done damage to this family. Do you agree with that?
I do. I mean...
And the public.
Yeah.
Just stupidity. But God bless Sheila and her family and everybody. And, you know, like Caroline said, go back and listen to it. We got what, one or two shows on it.
I think there's just one episode.
One episode. Yeah, you can listen to, and then you know, plus this and what we just gave you there. But to the family of Ember Graham, our blessings and prayers are with you. It's now been, how long have we been on this case?
Well, she's been missing since July 2nd, 2015, but I think we came in.
17?
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, so. I think 17 we came in. So God bless them. God love them on behalf of all of us at KIC.
All right, moving on to the next one. The next missing person we had was Molly Miller. She went missing July 8th of 2013.
We got the case when?
I have no idea. Probably in 2014. I have to go back to look at the actual. I know we came, I don't know dates. I know we came in after the fact.
14. It was okay.
Great.
So
Molly Miller goes missing with Colton Haynes.
I'm just trying to be a nice co-host and throw some stuff over to you.
Okay? You're asking me dates. I'm not a human.
You should
calculator.
You should be. None of us are, Caroline. Come on. Mm-hmm. Okay. So before I even talk about the Molly Miller case, there's one person I do want to talk about, and that's Paula Fielder. Paula Fielder is kind of like, she holds a bunch of different hats. She holds a deep love for Molly in her heart. She knows what happened. She knows what we're looking for. But she still forges on. She always has the attitude of, keep moving, let's go. Whenever I talk to Paula and I hang up the phone, I feel inspired by this woman. I mean, I'm telling you folks, Paula Fielder should be leading some kind of missing persons foundation, don't you think?
Yeah.
Not these fly-by-night yahoos. I don't have enough words for Paula. It all comes down to Paula Fielder is great. That's it. Paula Fielder is great. I thought about Paula last night while I was sitting there up in bed. Okay, so there's a lot of media going on this one right now. I've done two interviews.
It's because it's a 10-year anniversary.
That's right. I was fixing to say that. Mm-hmm. I did, what's it called? Backyard? Just listen for it. It's a backyard cold case, I think it is. Or garage cold case. Garage cold case.
Oh, that's the one you did yesterday.
I did. And I did a good 2 hours with them, so you can get on the inside of the case. Listen there. I released some things. They're releasing photographs that we've never released before on purpose. And the reason the purpose is because we're talking to someone in the case. So let us do our talking. Let them look at the pictures, right? And then we'll see what happens. Some of the pictures are actual pictures of track hose. I think there's a picture of me down, 16 feet in under the ground. Burn patterns in the ground in a ravine. But anyway, it's in a broken branch above, which matches everything that Molly said in one of her last phone calls to some of her friends. The Miller case, a lot of people in the media, especially when we go off the record, NBC, I had a conversation with last night. I don't know that there's going to be a Dateline on it. Some of the Dateline producers were on the call. I don't know that it's time for Dateline or anybody else to come in, because really what we're doing is we're looking for bodies. And of course, Colt Haynes' family, you cannot not mention them, how beautiful and wonderful they have been. But here's your bottom line, folks. And I want everybody to listen on this one. I have said it before. I think Caroline said it. Troy's reviewed some of this. He and who I talking about, Troy LaBeouf. Troy is employed with this company. He is a former lieutenant with a local police department here. He comes with criminal side. That's what we need to beef up on a little bit around here, is the criminal side. Of course, we have a FBI agent that Moonlight's with us. And they've both told me in looking at this case that I have it pretty well pat. There was a tree. Cole Haynes was on top of the tree looking out at in the middle of the night because he couldn't see. It was pitch black. The tree branch broke. He fell, broke his leg badly, as it was described by Molly and Colt. Molly went up the ravine to try to go find help for him so he didn't bleed out. And then, according to what we know, there was a small fight, and one person pulled out a gun, shot one in the head, and then the other one started to run, which was Molly, and shot her in the back. That's the story that the criminals tell. It's funny how they got their facts down on this one. Usually it's, you know, they had a bazooka and they blew them up, and it's not that. It's they describe the gun, which happens to be a weapon that we found in the early parts of the investigation that were held by one of the suspect's mother. Mm-hmm. And we found the gun. And the boyfriend said, get it out of my house. It's been sitting in here. I can't believe y'all are just now coming for this. And we were like, whoa, what? We immediately packaged it up, followed proper procedure, chain of custody, got it over to the highway patrol who was investigating at the time, Ronnie Hampton. Cannot say enough about that guy either. Ronnie Hampton, great guy. But anyway, the bottom line of this case is where the tree is and where the dogs all hit and where the ground was disturbed, etc. From that point, 1/4 of a mile in circumference. For those of you in North Newton County, that's around, that's a circle, right? And so we believe by mapping again and through evidence, which is removable fence, that their bodies are on a piece of property that is within 1/4 of a mile from what we call the death site. So how do we get on that piece of property? There's two ways. One, a subpoena, right? Or two, permission by the landowner.
You mean a warrant, not a subpoena.
Well,
a warrant.
A warrant, okay. Yeah, a search warrant, which is actually a subpoena deuces tecum, but we won't get technical. But you're right. It is a search warrant. And so the search warrant was denied, get this, folks, by the district judge up there. I mean, if you read the PC for the probable cause for the search warrant, I mean, this officer laid it out, just laid it out, just said, look, this is what we got. This is where the dig was. This is where we were. This is what we need to do. And all they wanted to do was fly, number one, a helicopter over at a treetop level, see where the ground was disturbed, or two, use our drone system, which was today, and it's just old. But this new one we have, we could fly it over and, we could see the disturbed ground, or we could see, you know, infrared, you know, remember when a body dies, it releases heat, and it's not just for one day. Try flying one of those drones over a graveyard. My God, it looks like it's lit up at night. And so these are the things that we wanted to do. Also, we wanted to get Trace on an airplane and get her back down to Oklahoma City and get her down to the site. And we wanted to get the dog out there because the dog kept, remember, you were there. Were you there?
No, I was actually out on maternity leave.
Oh, okay. It was Charlie. Boy, that dog wanted to go, just kept pointing its nose in the air and then kept wanting to go across the fence. We didn't have probable cause to go across the fence, so we didn't. So we got denied by the court and we got denied by the bad guys. So we're in denial. So until we can get a judge or a district attorney, who, by the way, is under the Brady rule right now, until we get a law enforcement help, right? I guess the best way to say it. And we get over that fence, which is less than 1/4 of a mile. Our belief is those bodies will be found very quickly. Now, there's a lot of conjecture, both on the police. Paula disagrees with us on some stuff, but we kind of said, well, we've been doing this 40 years and we kind of butted heads a little bit, but that's okay because that's what keeps the juices flowing.
Well, they haven't been found yet, have they?
Nope. And so this thing about Moxley Lake, there's no bodies down at Moxley Lake as far as we know. The evidence doesn't lead us there. The evidence in full led us to this ravine. The dogs led us to the blood pathogen and the pathogen, human body pathogen. You know, that's all I can say. And so right now we're kind of in a hold pattern there. But anytime we get a tip, and we get tips all the time on the Miller case. I get emails every once in a while. People say, hey, you know, I heard this or I heard that, and I'll pass it to you. Or you'll pass it to me and say, look, we got a tip in the Miller case. And we'll check it out. We always do. We check out everything that comes in. So if you're part of the Miller case and you're listening up in Oklahoma, I got the listenership when people log in, we can tell where you come from. That's just for our statistical information and, of course, for the blog company's statistical information. But it doesn't show who you are. It just shows you where you're from, you know, like Wichita, Kansas. For some reason, we get a lot of people out of Wichita. I don't understand that. But the bottom line is this, is that if you know something, say something. Pick up the phone and call your local police agency. If you're not comfortable, and this goes with all cases, folks. If you're not comfortable with the police agencies, and this is no rap at the police, and you're scared because you were involved, call us. We'll keep you anonymous. We just want the bodies. That's all we want. We want Molly and Colt to come home. Put Paula and her family at some ease. You know, the grandpa, who I love dearly, he butted heads with everybody. But you know what? When I always used to leave his house after we butt heads, he'd walk me down that wheelchair ramp or whatever it was, the steps, over to my car. And the last thing he'd do is give me a hug. Matt said so much. Keep going, Philip. Keep going. He'd give me encouragement. Let's go. Get him, get him, get him. And so that's what kept us encouraged. So that's the Molly Miller case. It is 10 years.
10 years next week.
Next week. That's right. So 10 years. We've been on the case 9. You know, people laugh at us and say, well, if you haven't solved it in 9 years, why can't you, you know? Screw off.
Well,
this one is not going to be solved tomorrow. This one's somebody knows where they buried those bodies, and we'll find them. Trust me.
If they
were
buried anywhere except for the Knit property, they would have been found by now, in
Absolutely.
My opinion.
Absolutely.
Based off of the amount of searches that were conducted, not only from our team, but as well from Paula and the series of people she's brought in after us, mm-hmm. From law enforcement searches that have been conducted to all of the volunteers that have been looking out, they would have been found.
Absolutely.
If they were not on the Knit property.
Absolutely.
It's still out in that vicinity.
And you know what? I got to tell you one little quick story about the people out in Oklahoma. These people are true cowboys and cowgirls. I mean, these are true people that live out there. The meth problem is out of control in Love County. It's just out of control. I don't think they'll ever bring it in control. They just cook meth and they sell it, or they bring it in from Texas. Love County's right on the Texas Oklahoma border. And I can tell you this. I went out there, and one guy laughed at me. He says, you ain't got no chaps on. And I said, well, I got my work boots on. Well, you don't have chaps. Come here, son. Goes over to his big old pickup, his dually, and pulls out another set of chaps. Put these on. Let me tell you, I'm glad I did, because I saw more. They weren't timber rattlers. What were they? They were Eastern Diamondbacks. Oh, Lord. I mean, if I saw 10, I saw 20. At one point, you just quit being scared because you can hear them rattle up out there, because at that point, there weren't any hogs out there. Now there's hogs, and they don't rattle. But it's very dangerous ground is what I'm trying to get through. And we were walking down a ravine where snakes were in holes. They were in, like, little caverns. And these guys were awesome, and nothing scared them. As long as they had that little silver stick that they could use to get them out of their way. But, you know, I tell you, everybody says the private investigation business always, you know, a bunch of shysters. No, No. Now we had some PIs that have been involved in this case up in Oklahoma that Paula's kind of checked our work on. And we've stuck to our guns. We've told Paula, look, this is where it happened. And our belief is that this is a solvable case. We just need the police and we need the government district attorney to sign the search warrant, allow us and the sheriff's department and the FBI. Our understanding, the tribal police have now taken the lead on it because everything went tribal, right? Tribal lands up there. Mm-hmm. And so that we dug on, which we probably shouldn't have done. We had permission by the landowner, but he didn't tell us it was on former tribal land. So we were like, oh, God, now we've messed up federally. But we didn't. It turned out to be a good thing. And so anyway, that's the Molly Miller case.
All right, and moving on to our last July case that we have is Dior Kuntz Jr.
That we'll talk about.
He went missing July 10th, 2015, and he has not been found either.
Okay, so we've been in and out of this case. When we were in, we were right on the cusp of having one of the suspects give us a confession, but instead she went out the door and got with Vernal, and they went over and got a clone my Willie after 8 hours of FBI interrogation. I'd never be able to figure that out. And so they went off and did their thing. We are still in contact with many people up there. And let me explain. Let's go through just the real quickly. So Vernal's father was the one that was in charge of the contract. Vernal's father had nothing to do with the fundraising. He didn't even touch the money. So a lot of you people out there that say that he touched the money, he never touched the money. They got us X amount of dollars. I think, what was it, $20,000?
I think so.
It was $20,000, if my memory is correct. And that money went for getting people up to Idaho Falls, one. Two, getting dogs up to Idaho Falls. And three, most importantly, getting ground searchers and paying for hotel rooms, food, drink, etc. Our company, Klein Investigations and Consulting, did not make a dime. In fact, we spent over $100,000 of our own money that went to salaries, that went to fuel. After the money ran out, that went to food, that went to lodging, you name it. Everything that has to do with the case. In the middle of all this, this wild pack of animals I call the Kuntz family, all of a sudden say, "Wow, you know, y'all are Dior and
at the very least." It's neglect.
It's neglect.
If you take a kid to a damn camping ground, then you keep your eyes on them and you don't let them out of your sight.
Yeah, that's their big deal. This kid disappears during the 2 o'clock hour, is somewhere in a campsite that's right there. I mean, if you go up there and you look around, you go, my God, this story they gave is a bunch of bull. It is a bunch of bull. I'm telling y'all. It's the stories these two, Jessica and Vernal, have given is nothing but crap. Nothing but crap. Until, of course, you know, they get their egos involved and they get a little bit loose in front of the cameras and they make gaffes. Watch them. They just make gaffes. And so the media got put in the middle because they filed a lawsuit. Right? Great. The media filed, Vernal filed a lawsuit with his father. His father was the figurehead. His father has now since passed during the middle of the lawsuit, which left Vernal there. And we were ready for depositions because every single motion to dismiss they filed, it went on and on and on and on. Finally, they just said, the judge was very clear. He said, well, the truth's the truth. Let's get the truth out. Let's put it in front of a jury. And that's when everything changed on a dime real quick. Their attorney filed a motion to dismiss for Vernal because Vernal was told in our understanding, that Vernal was told that you're going to have to give a deposition. And one thing about a liar, okay, especially when you get investigators like us, we document everything. We record it. We videotape it. We put it in chronological order. We put it in a timeline. We keep up with it daily, like daily, if the case is hot. Some days we don't because nothing came in. But we are very strict around here about documenting everything. That's why some people go, well, Klein's just arrogant. No, I'm not arrogant. I'm quoting to you what others have quoted to me. And so in this case, what has happened is Dior was playing in the playground, they circled the cars, like kind of like they used to circle the wagons. And out of nowhere, Vernal starts telling us on camera when we're taking his statement, oh, well, the baby went to the back of the car and played. There was a lug nut missing on one of the back tires. And we're like, really? Okay. What does that have to do with the price of oil? Anyway, so he stuck his hands in the tailpipe and he got dirt and soot all over him. And we kind of sat there and looked at him and said, wait a minute. We've met with Bonneville County. We've met with Limhi County. There's nothing in anything that says anything close. So in my mind, I'm doing the questioning, right? Everybody else is sitting back and I'm doing the questioning. And so I kind of came to an epiphany in my mind. I thought, well, hell, now he's telling us new stuff, because the cops would have told us something like that. Why would the cops have told us that? Because they found pathogen underneath the wheel well and the back tire. Now, Vernal threw it off as, oh, well, that was an animal. Okay. A human animal? What are we talking about here? What's going on, dude? And so that's when he started getting really, what would you say, Carolyn? What's a good word? Nervous? No. Paranoid? Yes.
Paranoid.
And started showing paranoid behaviors. Then, of course, the coup de grace, which is we got him on tape. He thought the cameras were off. Remember, when you get a microphone on you or in front of you, sit there and say nothing. Nothing. Not a word. You know why? You can ask for water. I would always ask for water. Because they're always rolling a second camera, and it's a hot mic. I mean, I've been caught on a hot mic before saying a joke, which was inappropriate at the time, but I apologized to everybody, and everybody forgave me. But every time I have a mic on, like I go into some of these major studios, NBC, ABC, CBS, and I come sit down. Once I'm mic'd, I mean, actually before I'm mic'd, when I walk into the studio, I'm boop, not going to say a word. They'll ask me, well, here's what we're going to talk about. And I'll go, okay. Well, this is what we're going to do. Okay. They're wanting me to do kind of a pre-interview with them. I'm not doing that. Ask your question, I'll answer your question. Especially like depositions. You know, again, ask your question, I'll answer your question if I can, if it's within the rules and the Texas Rules of Procedure. So, that brings us to, we get sued. And of course, we win. Right. Obviously, we win because the truth was on our side. All we had to do was present a few things. And then the third portion of this is that we got a call from a family member, said, would you come back in? Please come back in. Please come back in. And we said, no. And during the lawsuit, we withdrew from the case because our attorneys told us we should probably withdraw. Because if we don't, they'll be able to ask us questions regarding what we're doing at that point in time with the case. And we don't want to tip off any potential murderers to what we're doing. So here's where it is. Vernal, he has no charges on him. Okay. There are some possible charges that could have been filed on him that have passed the statute of limitations. The sad part about this case in Sheriff Bowerman who is the former sheriff, and I talked a lot about was, why wouldn't Vernal cut a deal and say, okay, charge me with a Class C, whatever, because our theory is he was run over in that little circle. It was never an intentional murder. I got to say that. I don't ever believe it was an intentional murder. I think it was a Class C accident. They got the body. They got a cooler off one of the trucks. They put the body in the cooler, and then the next morning they headed down to, quote, downtown to get Swedish fish and tampons. And how many times you go through the line, Vernal? Oh, we only went through once. And I had the baby out and put him in the front of a truck, in front of a beer truck, and sat in the big seat, and he got to steer the truck and everything else. And we find the truck drivers and they're going, that never happened. That's a lie. That never happened. And then we ask the poor people in the only convenience store within 60 miles. We ask them, hey, you know, do you remember that? Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, we've got it on disc back here, him on camera. And guess what? There's only one person that came in. One person. And that was the girl. But she came in twice. Twice. They got both receipts. Twice. So now we know they're lying about being on the inside of the store. No cameras picked up a child. The employees don't remember children. We found people that were in line that used credit cards. Hey, do you remember this? Yeah, I follow the case. No, he was never next to me. Have you ever told the police that? Well, no one's ever asked me.
We have the witnesses that were interested in the type of truck that they were in and actually opened the doors and looked in the truck that Vernal showed these two individuals. And they told us there was no kid.
There's no kid. We don't have the kid. We do, however, have the kid, is our guess, up on the mountain. But we do have a missing cooler. The dogs hit in a certain area. They brought in this guy, David Marshburn. Is that his name? Did I say that right?
I think there were two different ones. David
Marshburn and some girl.
Yeah, but that was another PI firm. There was somebody else over from the other side, David Barnhart and his wife.
Oh, did they come in? Okay, good. And so everybody, you know, most of them are like, oh, well, yeah, here's where our dog hit. And we're like, yeah, that's where your dog hit. Guess what? That's where our dogs hit. This is where we did the dig. Holy crap, y'all did a dig? Yeah, we just didn't tell the public. Holy crap. Yeah, holy crap. You know, you want to get on TV, you want to get on radio and say how bad we are, and then you go up there and find the same thing we did, and then you go, oh, well, if I'd known that, I wouldn't have said anything. Yeah, okay, sure. You know, you just want to make a name for yourself, and then they start accusing us. They say, well, you took $20,000, yeah, for traveling to get teams up here. By the way, how did you get up here? Oh, well, the mother-in-law gave us $2,500, and we use that for airfare and bring the dog up here.
So your expenses were paid too, huh?
Oh, wow. How much did they pay you per hour? Well, I did it for free. Oh, okay. Okay, you did the same thing we did, right? Yeah. Why? Well, because he's a two-year-old kid. Yeah, rewind all the way back. One of the reasons we told the media we were coming up there was because of one thing. It's a two-year-old baby that was missing. And that strikes into our heart, and luckily we are financially able to do it. And thank you, you know, to our clients out there that work so hard. And in fact, some of our clients would contact us and say, hey, can I throw some money into the bin? And I go, nah, I just think that's inappropriate because it brings up legal challenges and legal, you know, situations. I just don't think it's smart. But the bottom line is, on the Dior Coons case, we are back in it now. We are working on it. I worked on it the other night. I was up here till midnight the other night. We're working on it. We're going back over evidence. We did what they call a peer review. You know, this is another thing.
And we are running out of time, so make it quick.
I will, because it's important. A peer review is when you get some of the smartest minds in the investigatorial world that have these mega companies, that they have made it big. Gavin DeBecker, okay? A few of these big names out there. And we send the file up to them electronically, or we give them access, actually. We give them access, and they go in and read the file. And we ask one, only one question. One question is what I always ask. What could we have done better? Where are we wrong? What could we have done better? And we pass our peer review every time. And so that's the one thing in the Dewar Coons case. We passed our peer review. Where do we think the body is, Mr. Klein? Well, we'll talk about that at a later date because it's going to fire back up here very soon, very quickly. We will discuss that because it was one area to which during our peer review, they asked us the question, why didn't you do this? And why didn't you check this out? And they're right. You agreed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We messed up. We didn't. Cooler's missing. It was buried for a while. Where's the quickest, easiest place to dump it off? Was it taken? And so that's what we're going to be working on this round is where was it taken? Everything up at that lake is now beyond ridiculous. And we know that. You know how we know that? Don't you think the parent, if they thought the child was up there, don't you think those damn parents and that crazy ass mother-in-law would go, oh, we've got to get up there. All they ever do is they go up there for show with the cameras because they ask him the question, well, when was the last time you were up here? Did you go up there this summer? What did you do? Also, the sheriff's department, they don't go up there and look around. I mean, the sheriff goes up and pokes around every once in a while. That's his job. But they know the body's not up there. That little body's not up there. But we'll find you. Dior, we're going to find you. And the other thing is we got a very disturbing note about the East Idaho News. A copy of a note that was sent by East Idaho News. Quote, we want nothing to do with Philip Klein or Klein Investigations and Consulting. Our message to the East Idaho News? Okay.
Noted.
Noted. Written down. Copy put in the file. So, apparently they have been, and they've got, look, folks, they've got to live in Idaho Falls. And I get it. I get it. Browning was an advertiser. I get it. They need to separate themselves. I get it. But anyway, this case is going to fire back up here very soon, and you're going to see probably see us up in Idaho Falls within the next 2 months, which will be lovely because it'll be nice and cool. And so our prayers are with the Coons family, the good side of the Coons family, and we'll see you soon up there. Okay.
All right. And then lastly, we do have a new missing persons here locally that we have been retained on. We will be starting our next episode discussing his disappearance and some circumstances around that to bring awareness specifically to our region a little bit more. But yep. Anyways.
This is a very serious case.
His name is Bo James from Bridge City, Texas.
Yep.
So tune in next time. Our next episode will be solely about him. And we will be pushing his missing persons poster.
A very good family. And we're going to do a full podcast on this because we need to get it out to the public. And we need the public down here. Because not a lot of people go missing down here. And they usually, if they do go missing, they're thrown out in the swamp and the alligators get them. So there you go.
All right. Well, if you haven't already, make sure you're following us on Spotify or Apple Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at The Klein Files, and we will see you next time.
That's right. And drink from a good Yeti. That's all I got to tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
Goodbye.
The Klein Files. I'm in a grumpy mood.
Blah, blah, blah. And you know what they say, assuming makes an ass of yourself.
My name's Philip Klein, and I'm a fixer. And I am.
It's a real damn thing.